If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grime America Show. Coming at you this week with OG podcaster and friend of the show, narrator, even did some narrating for us, Miguel Connor from Aeon Bite. So we have a great chat with him. And of course, we got everybody's favorite podcaster, Graham the Renovation Man Dunlop, up there side hustling, glazing, painting, all these things I never would have thought possible.
Got to do. I was breaking glass. I mean, I thought about it afterwards. I'm like, why didn't we like throw, like, so I was just reworking this porch with the guy that I'm working with, and it's an old, like 100-year-old porch, right? And I think it's old windows, like that old, right? So we had to replace every one of those little windows. So I was breaking them out with a hammer, and I was thinking afterwards, I'm like, why didn't we like set up a golf club and like throw some baseballs through the window or just get a little creative on?
Because you're working, you know? I'm not paying you to play around. I'm not paying you at all, but that's
no. Like, he might have enjoyed that. I don't know. I mean, you know. But yeah, we could have. But like, yeah, it was interesting. What
is the customer like at the location?
Yeah, yeah. Right. It's a house. It's an old house. Yeah,
and be hitting golf balls and throwing baseballs
in the yard. Yeah, I know. But I mean, because it was I was like, why aren't we videotaping this? We're breaking all the glass. You know, it's just fun.
Videotape,
but it was very tedious, right? Pulling out all the glass, reworking all the frames, and then repainting it and glazing it, and it's a big process. So, but I'm just getting whatever hours I can right now. I mean, it's perfect situation. I got part-time work, part-time physical work in the little town I'm in, and it's perfect.
It's good for you, the physical work.
Yep.
When you're working, you look a little more trim. Yeah. A little more bouncy stuff is good for you. Gets you out of the house.
Yeah. It's I'm sore a lot though. I'm tired. Like, it's exhausting.
Even the camaraderie is good, you know, get out with other men and build stuff and break stuff. Sounds like
break stuff and rebuild stuff. Yeah.
That's even easier.
Yeah.
I see. What
it's a perfect, it's a perfect situation, man. I'm reading, I'm almost finished Varieties of Religious Experience. So I'm reading that in the morning, narrating that in the mornings, and then going out to do that physical work in the day and then podcasting by night. It's like busy, long days, but it's all good. Good, that's going to be a good one. Yeah, that's William James. Like, it's a really popular book.
That's right. And of course, we got our big event coming up like soon. Well, you're coming here to, you'll be officiating. I got the marriage license, so I'm allowed to get married.
Nice.
Yeah, I had to jump through a bunch of hoops for the state. Not a bunch, but, you know, enough.
I didn't have to jump through any hoops to officiate your ceremony. I mean, it was pretty like, just like basically register.
Really? And they just give you a number, like you're an officiant number?
Temporary marriage commissioner license thing. Just like, it's like, you just have to, it was almost so easy. Like, why do we even have to go through this step? They've got somebody in the office just handling these all the time. I mean, it was pretty efficient too, you know, but. It's just weird. Why do we have to, you know, go through these?
Are you going to frame it or anything? You going to keep it?
I don't know. I don't even have a printer. So, I mean, like, I sent it to your wife to be. So maybe she can print it for me and I can take it back, a physical copy.
I can print it for you. Yes, no problem.
I mean, I could, you know, I could take it somewhere and probably print it. But, you know, I just don't have a printer set up.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, cool. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to see some people that we travel with on our Contact at the Cabin events at your little wedding. I guess there's only going to be a few people there, right? I'm expecting a small wedding, right?
I think it's around with all the kids and everything. I think maybe 35 or 37 or something.
Okay,
like
that's
that.
Perfect.
40 yeah, that's top.
Kind of, yeah, that's kind of what I pictured.
Should be pretty good. I got some tents, you know, we'll just hang out and have a time. And, you know, all that good stuff. I think it'll be a fun little event.
And I'm looking forward to it because we get to travel right from that wedding, basically, right to the Gorge with Randall Carlson and Bradley Young. The little, about a week, six nights in the Gorge.
Yeah, that's right.
Not in the Gorge, but traveling to the Gorge and then in the Gorge. Yeah.
Spokane, Lewiston, Kennewick, Hood River, ending in Portland. So
yeah,
there's still like one or two spots left for that. If people want to jump in last minute, they can go over, get that, and join us on a little trip, a little merry adventure.
Go to contactofthecabin.com.
That's right.
There's links in the show notes.
Always links in the show notes. Randall Carlson, Radia. And there you have it. I mean, that's a good one to get to. It's a good one to get to.
Oh, yeah. It includes a Zoom call, like a personal Zoom call with all the attendants and Randall and Brad. So we have like a little Zoom meeting for a couple hours going over everything. And then Randall does private presentations for us throughout the week. Like, I don't think every night, but there'll be a couple. I mean, there's going to be his moon presentation that I don't know if that'll ever get public or not, but we'll get to see some sides of the moon that you didn't know about. And also watch the harvest moon rise, full moon rise that night.
That's right. It's going to be a doozy of an event. Hey, did you, here's one for you. Did you update the show notes to for the reinstated Twitter account?
Oh, probably not.
Well, don't bother.
No.
They have booted us off again.
No.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that now.
Can you believe it?
No, I can't believe. What do you mean, dude? Don't tell me that now. It's already, what? I don't understand what's going on.
I don't understand either. Check it out. I have a little Grimerica Darren. Your account Grimerica has been suspended for violating the X rules due to a user report. Specifically for violating our rules against violent speech. You may not threaten, incite, glorify, or express a desire for harm or violence.
No, dude, what? This has got to be an old, like, this has got to be a weird little glitch or something in here because of, I feel like this is what kept you. Go ahead.
That's my take too. I mean, I've gone through the tweets, every tweet I've tweeted since I got back on, and I don't see any that can be considered as citing violence.
So you're suspended? Does that mean canceled or just suspended for like a...
Well, I don't know. It doesn't say that it says that after careful review, we determined your account broke the X rules. Your account is permanently in read-only mode. And I mean, all the tweets are super benign.
Well, it's because you know why it's picking up your old ones somehow.
That was my take. So here's the other thing. You notice that what's not in here is the tweet.
Because it was deleted.
Because you think, you know what I mean? They almost
you deleted the tweet. Oh, that's so weird, dude.
It normally would show the tweet, the offensive tweet, right?
Yeah, but you had to delete the tweet.
But I had to delete the tweet.
And it wasn't even offensive, honestly. It was just
nuanced. The tweet was until you stroke out.
Until you stroke out. You're not glorifying it and saying you're just, it's a friendly, loving warning that if you keep up this behavior, that's what's going to happen. Not by anybody's hand except for your own.
And then I retweeted some stuff, you know, critical of the Palestinians.
No, there's some
Ottawa, but no, you know,
there's some glitch of the Canadian glitch,
right?
Whatever got you in, whatever kept you in that penalty box before, which was something about Canada,
has
the Canadian politicians
again.
Is now what
has caught me again. The net that I broke through, I've like got caught in another net.
No, they've reinstated the old net. Like they found those other ones that you did. You should have gone and deleted those ones, actually.
Which other ones?
While you're in there.
Which other ones?
The ones that you were talking about, you know, unliving, people unliving themselves and stuff. Like, that's the way we have to talk about it these days.
Well, people killing themselves?
No, you don't. You just unliving. You can't, and then you go and just go against me. I give you the new way we're supposed to talk about these things, and then you just, you know.
Well, I'm definitely not going to, like, police my speech on the podcast. I would consider not posting certain words if you think that it'll help, but I'm definitely not in any way, shape, or form going to censor myself on the show. But shouldn't it show me the tweet?
Oh, totally. Something's whacked. That's really crazy. So what's your plan? Did you already reply? That's so disappointing, dude.
I said,
when did that happen?
Just today. Just a few hours ago.
Did you already appeal again?
I appealed. And I also asked for evidence of the offense. Like, show me what I've done wrong.
Did you get your AI to help you appeal against their AI? Like, now you're stuck in the AI.
I'm probably stuck in the AI box again.
Did you get a response?
I got some tweets out there. I boosted your account at least.
I got 20 more followers.
Anyway. I mean, sorry to spring that to you on the show, but...
I was all excited. I was really excited because you're like, you got your 40,000 followers. You have access to all these great guests that we have because it is harder nowadays to book guests through emails and contact forms.
I was just talking to, like, I was in the process of talking to like a few people. A few of them I think I can get a hold of anyway. Like, I've got some connections to the Last American Vagabond anyway. I can get a hold of him. I can get a hold of Alex Stein anyway. But there was like a couple others, doctors that I was chatting with again, and James Lindsay and these guys that I don't know that I can get back through that.
No, you won't be able to.
The best bet would be is if I could have an account with the logo and everything the same and show up in his comments. But, you know, if I do that, they're just going to delete it. They're just going to delete any accounts that I'm like, yours. I mean, you could get caught up in this again.
The good news is that you haven't got a response yet from your latest appeal, right? So usually your AI responses are very quick.
Yeah, we'll see. Here's hoping I'll get an email later tonight or tomorrow that just says, you're back, baby.
Oh, sorry again. We made a mistake again.
I mean, it was a great 5 or 6 days.
That Canadian politician got through to us again.
Saying hi to some people. But
right.
Not anymore. We're back out.
Well, I got an email to read. Should I read it? Response to our chat at the beginning, last week's episode, the intro that we did for the Bradley Young episode.
Oh, boy.
About the sacred numbers and all that, right? Do you remember the 360-day year, that controversy?
Oh, yeah, yeah, when I was trying to get you. Yeah, yeah.
What?
Did someone set us straight?
I'll read it. We'll see what it's probably not going to satisfy your schedule.
Does it include just some holy days for like beating your wife and smoking?
No, dude. Yeah. So thanks for introducing my work on the Grammarica podcast you did with Bradley Young. You did an excellent job, and the few questions that arose during your conversation with Darren have a simple answer. Everything takes place within a 360-day year. The remaining days were not counted. Even the Romans considered them to be unfavorable, and doing business during this period of 5 days was not recommendable. I can't tell you how this concept worked out with regard to the lining up of the solstices and equinoxes, Darren's question, and I don't think this will ever be discovered because the system of time measured dates back to the previous civilization. I've also listened to several of your older podcasts. I must say that you guys have done an amazing amount of interviews with very interesting guests, many of which I've never heard of. In your interview 481 some 3 years ago, Micah Dank draws a great many parallels between religion and myth and astronomical relations. So he's basically saying the exact same thing as me. My conclusions back up his findings through my reconstruction of this underlying framework of very old, perhaps universal, mathematics that is behind it all. These astronomical relationships are well demonstrated in the Sacred Numbers collection produced by Jordan Collin, which for that same reason points to the work of Malcolm Bendall. I would like to recommend the work of Jordan Maxwell, whose explanations on this subject are totally logical and most of all, crystal clear. All of us alternative researchers have come to the exact same conclusions through different paths of investigation and knowledge. I'm sure that there are many more who could make valuable contributions to our newly developed insights in this field. Together, we are assembling a mountain of evidence against the mainstream paradigms concerning humanity's distant past. By revealing details that used to be enigmas and secrets, such as the double meanings of the units of time that describe both time and distance, we are building a very strong case that cannot be neglected any longer. I'm reading all this because I like how he's presenting it in the way that like this is coming out. Like, and I had a bit of an epiphany that I want to talk about before. I think it was after, I don't know if I had read this or not, but it just today or yesterday I had a bit of an epiphany about this stuff. In the process, we are rewriting history, giving our forefathers the credits they rightfully deserve. Dear Graham, you may want to listen to your podcast 647 with Randall Carlson, where he talks about his lifelong obsession with the numbers 108 and 43,200. You may have already guessed that 108 is the number of degrees of the sun's circumference that is orbited by the earth in exactly half a day, or 43,200 seconds. And in brackets here, he has 216 divided by 2 and 86,400 divided by 2. He then mentions the Sumerian Kings List, 432,000 years, and the Vedic Yugas, again, 432,000 years, which can all be explained as multiples, of 43,200 seconds, or half a day of orbit. Can you double check that? 43, what is that in hours, I wonder? 43,200 divided by 60 divided by 60? 12 hours, huh? Wow. That is interesting. As you know, these subjects are all dealt with in my document on 144,000. Being a great fan of Randall's as a person and of his work, I think it's about bloody time that somebody helps him gain proper understanding so we can move on. Wouldn't you agree? Now it's up to you and me. I hope you are doing well, and I keep looking out for more interviews and the revelation of hidden knowledge. Don O'Dyke. So that's a great email. I mean, so here's my revelation. I was thinking about the 144,000 and the 40, like the 43,200, right? Because the seconds, to me, that means like, because remember time, I've never really wrapped, I've always thought just time was just random, right? Like, or, you know, our measurement system was just like, no, just whatever, right? General, not sacred for some other meaning. But if the second is like 43,000 seconds in a half day, for example, 12 hours, or the 144,000 seconds, If they're correlated with these astronomical things, to me, there's some meaning, like sacred meaning behind that. And if the seconds are sacred, then the frequencies can be sacred because frequencies is got that time component to it. So 432, for example, right? 432 is that main frequency, right? The one that they talk about. And that to me, so all of a sudden it's gaining more weight to me how these sacred numbers mean things, right? Because now I can understand why the frequencies are sacred, because the time is sacred that it's made from. And again, it's 432. You're muted, which has been nice. I haven't been interrupted through this whole time. You're still muted.
Oh. I'm back, baby. I guess that I feel you. I mean, definitely feel you for most of it.
you know what I mean, though? Eh, about that.
A little weird at the end. But that's okay. That's a good weird.
So I can just, like, let me just go back to, like, this sacred, this is a background info on this, just to sort of tie this together, because we might as well here for spend a bit of time on this 144,000. So he says, one sacred year has 360 times 86,400 seconds. That equals 31,104. Now that's that Brahma number.
But it's all
the sacred Brahma number. Equals 216 times 144,000 seconds. It takes the Earth 144,000 seconds to orbit a distance equal to the circumference of the sun.
That's all like great. It,
right? No, that one doesn't have to do with the year, right? That's just like strictly like 144,000 seconds. So that second is important because it's the distance equal to the circumference of the sun. And that takes place 216 times per year.
The circumference or the diameter?
Well, he said circumference.
So maybe it's, that could be another tie-in between the second and the sun.
That's exactly like that's the... So that's why this is these numbers are so important, because it's like the ancients knew that it took us that long, and like that's how time was calculated. Maybe not like a watch like we have, like
yeah. But wait! Isn't that just as simple as saying okay? Okay, let me think about this for a second.
Yeah.
So isn't that like the seconds to the sun? Now, the seconds to the size of the sun, that is a little bit weirder, but we're already for sure like, yeah, no, my argument, the thing, the devil's advocate position I was going to take, I don't think is going to work for that one. But we have sort of set everything up for our time of day and everything around how long it takes us to see the sun, you know, from one day to the next. But yeah, the size of that shouldn't matter, so.
Right. So the other thing in here is it takes the Earth.
I'm still not on board with the 360 day year.
There's okay. Well, nonsense. what about 360 seconds to orbit a distance equal to the circumference of the moon?
That's fine. So
it takes the Earth. Right. Okay. This still process takes place
to a year.
This post. I mean, but how can this take place 86,400 times per year? There's that number again.
The only way you'd convince me is if the year used to be that long and something's happened and we're a little farther away from the sun or whatever's going on out there. No, I don't think it's flat though. Anyway, are you done?
I guess, yeah.
I did want to say, we got some people to thank. I mean,
all right.
We did our little support round. We got a few bites. We could use a few more bites. I mean, let's be honest. But we did get a few bites, so it is nice to see that there was some people out there listening to our dire straits and coming around and helping out. A few monthlies, a few new one-time donations. Do you want to go through them, Graham?
Sure, I can go through them, yeah. So we have Cody Edwards. Hola, amigos. Gas money for Columbia Gorge Tour. Love the content. Darren, trying to be funny. Keep working on that. And fix that crooked mustache. You got a crooked mustache? Graham, I don't know you so well, so I won't give you shit yet. Seriously, though, boys. Much from Idaho. Much love from Idaho. And then this one's from James. James, 3333. Hello, lads. Actually, I should say how much Cody's was. Does it say? 4320. There's that number again. 4320. Hey. How did they know? Oh, my God. James, 3333. Hello, lads, and greetings from Quebec, the highest tax province in North America. I'm still sticking it out here after moving from California almost 15 years ago. Sometimes I wonder why, but it goes without saying. Your show has helped keep me sane. Keep them coming, James, in Montreal.
Not only are you spending all your taxes, you're spending a bunch of my taxes too, yeah. James.
Yeah, thanks, James. How does that Alberta and Saskatchewan money feel over there back east?
Saskatchewan.
Are we Saskatchewan? Well, we send money, I think. I think we're above. I think
yeah, you
anyways.
Do. It's not
anyways, we talk about that on our Grimerica Outlawed Roundup episodes a lot. I got some good stuff coming up this week. But yeah, I was born in Montreal. I lived in Quebec for the first 8 years of my life. Been back there a couple times. Then we've got a new one here, $2. Mike, Mr. White. This is from Mr. White. Thank you, Mr. White. That's through Patreon. I mean, that's a good way to do it too. Like, it doesn't get you any extra content, but if people are on Patreon, it's easier to use it that way. Go for it.
Fucking go for it.
And we have another one from Stevie here, 555. I don't think there's a note. So
monthly. That's a monthly.
And then an old buddy of Darren's from the show has continued his donation monthly from James, and it's 1080.
Jim Davis.
U.S. Jim Davis. There you go. Thank you, Jim.
That guy from somewhere.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Hey, we talk about Elvis in this show. So I know. Did you do that on purpose?
Or? No, I didn't. Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on. That's a two. That's some fucking shitty sick bro. Anyway, that's the book is good, though. And the chat with Miguel is good. But first of all, thank you to all those people for hearing the call, beckoning to the call, and our beckoning, answering our beckoning, however the fuck it is. And supporting the show, grammarica.ca/support. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation day. Help us keep up with the between the inflation and the PayPal apocalypse and just the rate of churn and attrition from the new credit cards. And it's a few cancels a week.
No, it's also PayPal too. I mean, they also.
Yeah, they might not be on purpose. That's what I was going to say is you guys, if you might think you're supporting the show right now, but it might have been canceled for a while. So go check out America.co. Check out your emails. Check out your PayPal. Let us know. If you're not sure, send us an email. Hey, is my support still on? Yeah, it is. No, it isn't. Fix it. Yeah. Fix your karma. Suit up. Get after it. Become a lord. Become a lady. Get to that $1,000 mark. Whatever you donate, we're going to read your note. But if you become a lord or a lady, you are living large. And Graham will give you back rub. So, and what else? I think that's it. Just support.
I got a bio for Miguel here.
You do have a bio? A bio? Yeah. Bio for Miguel. All right, let's have it.
His life quest is to inspire others so they may find their authentic selves and artistic potential. Oh, wait, before I do that, I have an email first.
Oh, that's right. I knew you did.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got to go back and find it here quickly. I think it's some advice for you.
For me?
Yeah.
What kind of advice?
Hey, guys, I love all your work. I listen regularly. Darren, during the interview, was talking about how it seems a bit discouraging to be told that you need to follow Jesus to get to the afterlife. It's a hard concept to come to grips with. I have my skepticism, too. But as far as following the teachings of Jesus and being a good person, Jesus says that he is the way, the truth, and the life. And that none shall come to the Father except through him. It's very exclusive, but offered to everyone. I'm still learning on my own journey. You guys have been very helpful to me in finding my own path in life. I wish you guys the very best in life. I hope my words help a tiny bit. Keep up the good work. I'll be listening. Matt. So thanks, Matt. Yeah.
Thanks, Matt. I just think it's weird for the people that never heard of Jesus. I mean, what do? They're just out automatically.
No, they just got to be good people. It's offered to everybody. Some denominations think it's offered to all.
Well, that I can get on board with. Then I'm in. And I think I'm in. I might be in. Yeah. I mean, but how do you repent then if, you know, you're just going to feel bad? Just going to like have a little remorse?
Yeah, just apologize, make amends, you know, that kind of stuff.
Or have the list. Remember that? What was that show where Buddy had the kill list, and Buddy called it apologizing? It's like he just crossed his name off.
I don't know. It sounds like a Quentin Tarantino film or something.
Nah, you know what? It might have been like a Happy Gilmore thing, or Adam Sandler thing.
Yeah.
I remember correctly, it was that one that cut his fucking head off guy, I think, you know.
Well, that was the 12 steps. I mean, the 12 steps are, you know, you make a list. You make a list and you make amends. You make a list of the people that you would make amends to, the people you hurt. So,
what if they refuse your apology?
It doesn't matter. Like, you've done it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's fine. Yeah, it's all about, like, you doing it.
All right.
So back to Miguel's thing. Host of Ambite Gnostic Radio, a popular show that takes audiences from ancient mysteries to a modern meaning. My articles and fiction have appeared in publications such as the Gnostic Journal, The Heretic, Mindscape, Reality Sandwich, and many others, including being an author of the month for Graham Hancock's website. My books include the critically acclaimed Voices of Gnosticism, Bardic Press, and the post-apocalyptic vampire epic series, The Dark Instinct Trilogy. I didn't realize you wrote those. As well as the fantasy novel, The Executioner's Daughter. My bio on Elvis Presley, America's Magician, Inner Traditions, will be released early 2025. He's lectured, appeared at such events as the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, Alan Eisenberg Show, Magic Radio, Rune Soup, Skeptico, The Higher Side Chats, Grimerica, and the Gnostic Countercultures Conference at Rice University. He's done narrations for audiobooks, including The King in Orange, Concerto of the Rising Sun, and The Secret Teachings of All Ages. There you go. So his website is thegodabovegod.com.
God above God. .com, guys, check it out. Check out adultbrain.ca and check out, I think it was Pantheism, its story and significance, as narrated by Miguel Connor. Other than that, guys, enjoy the chat. A friend of the show, Miguel Connor.
I was just thinking about how to intro you. Are you the pompous of Gnosis, Miguel?
I love your. I love you. Want me to be, honey? Just pay me.
I love your intros to all your shows. I think you have the Levy Breaks or some Zeppelin song in there that I still listen to your podcast. I'm still a subscriber, actually.
Awesome, yeah. Yeah.
Plus, I'm a plus member of yours. Not too many. I don't have too many on there, but you're still there for me.
Cool. Yeah, I have to admit I've kind of fallen off the world when it comes to listening to podcasts, and I hate it. But the Elvis book, David Bowie book, and other projects, I just don't have time. I don't have time to watch TV. So
Elvis book?
Yeah. See that somebody over there? Wait, no. Pointing at the cat. Over there, the Elvis book. Yeah, it's coming out in April of 2025. Whatever you thought about Elvis is wrong. And the main thesis is that Elvis is the greatest magician in modernity. All those guys, Crowley, John Dee, doesn't matter. They're just amateurs. And Elvis is the greatest. He's America's magician. And I go into very detail, none of the sort of sensationalistic tabloid stories, but research family, Priscilla, friends, and Elvis was just a walking magician. He was a shaman. He had extraterrestrial experiences. I mean, he was into all the stuff we are into, conspiracy, long before we did, and very excited to have written it.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I was going to say, I just heard about Elvis being and his occult library, and then I realized it was me listening to your show the other day with the Grimoire guy, one of your latest releases of the Grimoire guy, and you were talking about, but I didn't really put it together that you were coming out with this book. So yeah, talk about his library of occult books too, because he, like you said, he had the resources to track down a lot of these, right?
Yeah. I mean, wherever, once he got into alternative spirituality, he would have, it doesn't matter if he was going to Hollywood or Vegas, he had workers carry around 200 occult books, from Manly P. Hall to Theosophy to Ancient Aliens, all that. And he was a voracious reader, almost a scholar. And even now, you can go to Graceland or some of the other places, you're going to run into one of his alternative spirituality books, whether it's Taoism or astrology or numerology. So again, it's one of those weird things. It's a secret that was never a secret because it's right there for everybody to see.
Wow. That's a fantastic little thread to pull on. So how about the end of his...
Would be blowing up our YouTube channel. Can you imagine Elvis Presley's listening to your audiobooks? I mean, you guys are both on it. You guys are both on it. So,
yeah. I'll be doing the audiobook this fall. I better master like a Memphis accent. Thank you very much. But no, I'll read the book with my own accent. But when I quote Elvis, I'll try to use a Tennessee accent.
How many pages?
It's pretty big. It's about 300 pages, 80,000 words.
Wow.
So it is detailed. I mean, I've got 300 or more footnotes. I mean, I backed this shit up big time and very lucky to be with a great publisher, Inner Traditions. They've checked out my sources. Everything is lining up and it's a big case. It really is an incredible case. And the funny thing is how it happened. I've never been an Elvis guy, knew little about him, didn't hear his music. You guys remember in the movie Pulp Fiction when, forget what's her face, is telling John Travolta, there are two types of people in this world, Elvis people and Beatles people. And who you are will tell you, who you choose will tell you who you are in your life. So I was like proudly a Beatles guy, right? But then 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, I went to Portugal and my uncle has a Santo Daime church. He's a shaman, so he does ayahuasca ceremonies. And I did a few ayahuasca ceremonies. They were brutal. God, they were brutal. But these are necessary. Again, sometimes the scourging means it's cleaning up your system, your ego, all the junk inside of you. And after it, this voice kept saying, you need to write a book about Elvis. And I'm like, why? So I finally like gave up. I think it was February of 2022. I sat down, I wrote the book, and in 3 months I had 80,000 words, 300 pages.
It just
came out of me and the book was ready. I had Mitch Horowitz help me out, place the book, and we went to Inner Traditions and bang, and they said, yeah, this is it. We're Beatles people, but we're going to allow it.
Yeah, but that must have been hard, a deeply researched book, though. I mean, it's not you just made one up out of like a download from, you know, your higher self or the Akashic Records or something. I mean, that must have been quite a laborious task.
Yes and no. It's almost like everything fell into place. Wherever I would reach for, the information was there. Holy yeah, of course, shit. I had about 20 bios and I read them and all that.
Yeah,
it just kept falling into place. The ideas, how to structure the chapters, the arguments to make, you know, because the book not only goes with the supernatural world of Elvis, the high weirdness world that he lived in, but it also tries to explain in esoteric or alternative ways why he had a drug addiction. Why did he hang out with the Colonel? Why was he... What was the issue with he and his relationship with Priscilla? So I couched out in Jungian, alchemical, Mark Stavish, egregore terms, and I tried to bring out more to it. Tried to understand his UFO experiences, how they work on a higher level. And there's even a chapter which will surprise everybody where I parallel Elvis and Philip K. Dick, and they both have like the same life. And same beliefs, same view of the world. So if you're wondering, if you're a Philip K. Dick fan, you know that Elvis was very similar in how he saw the world.
Wow.
And his experiences, also his addiction, because let's face it, people always wonder, well, why was Elvis and Philip K. Dick such drug addicts? I said, well, you got to understand, they weren't boomers. They came from the silent generation, completely different than the boomers, but they had their ideas and their attitudes. One of their ideas was sadly the idea that street drugs were bad, but whatever your doctor prescribed you was good. And they both fell into that trap, and that fed into their addiction, if you know what I mean. And
yeah, well, that's
destroyed their bodies, and they both died young.
That's what I was going to ask you about, is about the Elvis one. Is did that change your view of his death, or how he died, or his drug addiction? Like, or was it, because it's hard to, I don't know. I mean, I guess you and I come from a weird spot where we're both into some of this stuff, but we also have that sobriety. And I can't imagine being into this, but while also being addicted in a way. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the way, I mean, there's many theories I put. I can't answer the question. You know, addiction is a mystery where, you know, 1,000 years our descendants are going to be wondering about it. But I can't say that with both, like, say, Elvis or Philip K. Dick or even David Bowie. Now I'm writing a biography on him. I call him Elvis 2.0 because you start looking at Bowie's life, and on purpose, he was copying Elvis because it was his hero. But it's the idea of the wounded healer. And Paul Levy discusses it in his books on Wetiko. There's other books that in cultures, the shaman is usually somebody who's been broken, who's been traumatized, who had a near-death experience as a child, and these channels of communication open with the spirit world. And both Elvis and like Philip K. Dick had very traumatic childhoods, very similar. They both lost their twin at birth or around at birth. They both had abusive mothers. They both came from really bone-crunching poverty and other ideas. So as children, they just got broken, and that gave them their, you know, spiritual side, maybe their artistic side, their workaholic side. But again, they were broken, and eventually they just started leaning into drugs. And in a lot of shamanistic cultures, that does happen to the shaman. The pressure is so much that they become just these broken down drug addicts in their older age, but they're still very important to the tribe, right? People come for them for medicine, advice, divination, all that, but they just break down very fast and they end up having to lean on drugs and other things. So that's one of the theories or ideas I put in the book.
Wow. Do you have any examples of his practices? Like, did he have any like meditation or ceremonial or ritual practices at all that people wouldn't know about?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's quite a few. He was a disciple of Dayamata, who was the successor of Yogananda. So he would go to the ashram in California, and he would practice meditation, yoga, and all that stuff. So that was one of his big ones. Again, he practiced astrology, numerology. Later on in life, he started getting more into sort of new age hermetic stuff. So he started doing sex magic and these mind rituals to get his brain to have power. And we do have it's very documented. Many times he had this ability. He could like look at the sky and change the weather. He could look at a plant and make it move. He could astral travel. I mean, he was a natural born mystic, if you would. And I think he got that from his mother. His mother obviously had some sort of witch blood because she also could see the spirit world and all that. So he certainly had varying practices that he would change and modify as he went through his career and things changed and so forth.
Remind us when that comes out, and we'll I'd love to sort of plug it or something, make sure that we.
Yeah, I'll send. I'll send you a new copy if you guys want.
Yeah, for sure. When's the Bowie one coming out?
I'm still working on it. I just started it in May. And my advice is, if you start a book, start in February when it's winter. And so there's a lot less distractions. You know, it is May. Oh my God, I got to do yard work. Oh my God, the kids got to go to the beach. Or, you know what I mean? Everything. In February, it was just like nothing. So hopefully I can get a cop or a draft of the Bowie book by the end of this year. So,
right. Interesting.
Hold on, guys. I got to let. What is this?
Yeah.
I hear a cat. Am I?
Oh, that's probably my cat.
Wait, I hear my cat, but I don't see it. Oh, there she is. Oh, I don't know what she's doing.
It winds me out outside the door.
And they always they have the worst timing, these little shits.
Cats. What so Elvis, do you think he like conjured up that career then? Like what came first?
Ooh, that's a good question that I go into detail. It is very strange, right? I mean, you have this guy who most people said was average talent of a musician, didn't know how to read music. He was a good looking guy, but he was driving a truck and studying to be an electrician, like 18 years old. Somehow he goes into Sun Records, and one thing happens really fast, and all of a sudden, by the time he's 20, he's the biggest star in the world. So I, for example, posit a lot of ideas. I think it's we have to understand that rock music, as we know it, isn't what we think. And Chris knows, backed me up, and he's got the research to it. But rock music was basically a Holy Spirit tent revival. It was a Pentecostal music that just got kind of rewritten. So it's very spiritual music. And of course, when you start including Elvis, was of course very much into that. It was just as Johnny Cash and all the Little Richard, all those guys. It was their spiritual music that they just retranslated. And but also the blues. The blues is, of course, as I go into detail, is based on African animism, and it touches on this trickster being called the devil. So you had this combination of these two spiritual forces that came together, and this was an answer, because when the United States came out of World War II, it became this amazing empire. Suddenly everybody had money, and we had satellites, and the Russians, and UFOs, and the whole world changed overnight. And rock music was sort of this buffer, this spiritual buffer, to help the younger generation navigate this new empire and provide them with a wider sense of the world. You know, the generation of Elvis was into different forms of spirituality. They were into Black and Hispanic music. They were into reading the beats and all that. So that's what rock music did. So you have this combination of heaven and hell, the blues and the devil, and gospel music turning into rock music. So I call Elvis sort of the Lord of the Crossroads, because at the crossroads is where you meet this trickster being who will give you all your answers, but it'll come at a price. And of course, you guys may know the original Crossroads was Robert Johnson, you know, famously this guy who didn't know how to play guitar in Mississippi, leaves, goes to the crossroads, makes a deal with the devil, comes back, and suddenly he's a genius guitar player. And some people think he's, you know, the real founder of rock music. And then he dies in very mysterious ways. Elvis died on August 16th, 1977. Robert Johnson also died on August 16th. So I go into this labyrinth of music and the devil and all that, on how Elvis just seemingly popped out of nowhere. In fact, when he was auditioning at Sun Records, he sucked. He was there and he couldn't play any music, and it went all there. And the guy who owned Sun Records was like, this is just not going to work out. And he said, why don't we call it a day? He went into the back, and Elvis just suddenly, something came over him, and this very obscure blues song,
no called way.
That's All Right, Mama, came into him. And he started playing that song, and for the first time, he started, you know, shaking his hips and shaking like, you know, like Elvis did. And the guy on the other room was like, only two people knew of that song and that rock, that obscure, wasn't the guy's like, oh my God, I know this song. And he said, this is the sound I've been looking for all my time. A white dude able to play black music. And the guy gave him a contract on the spot. And next you know it. Oh, wait, no, it's a cat. Hold on one second, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Come on. Wow. Are you an Elvis guy or a Beatles guy then?
I don't know. I'm neither.
That's kind of where I find myself, too, is in the neither camp.
Yeah. But I want to ask him where that is in what's the date range of that then? So like, when would that have happened? That meeting at Sun Records, like, was that like late '50s or early '60s or something? Or
that was early '50s, probably around
early '50s, even
54.
Oh wow,
yeah,
okay,
yeah. And then you know, then the song came out. That's All Right, Mama became a big hit. And then came The Colonel, and then he went with RCA Records, and before you knew it, he was the greatest. I mean, the way Elvis changed culture in the world, it's unprecedented. I mean, everything changed. Women found their sexuality. Men found their cool edge. I mean, he was also really hated. I mean, his own pastor, Billy Graham, a lot of the church people turned on him and said he was the devil. He was, of course, tapped by the FBI, but Elvis completely changed culture. And in a way, as I argue, he invented American culture as you know it, the best and the worst. I
mean, and that would have been sort of from the mid-60s to the, or sorry, from mid-50s to mid-60s then? So before, right before the counterculture, he almost set the table for the counterculture then in a way.
Yeah, in a way he did, because he was definitely rebellion. I mean, who's the guy from the Ramones, the lead singer? I forget his name, but he always said Elvis exemplified punk, and punk is just music to the working class that offers hope. So he was certainly it. But in 58, of course, he gets drafted in the army. He goes in the army. His mother dies. He comes back and he's a bit changed. So he starts doing just really, really campy Hollywood movies for the next 6 years. But he makes a ton of money, but he's also bored. That's when he starts getting into alternative spirituality, into Hinduism, theosophy, Manly P. Hall, all these alternative things he really embraced. He almost quit the entertainment business twice to be a monk, once to be a Christian monk and once to be a Hindu monk, because he was like, I don't want this life. But he was talked out of it. And then in 67, all of a sudden, he is reborn as Vegas Elvis. And, you know, the rest is history.
Oh, okay. I see. I didn't know that big split there, or I forgot about it. Yeah. So what else is going on with Aeon Byte since we last talked to you 4 years ago, Darren, and you were kind of chit-chatting a little bit in the beginning that it's been 4 years. So we missed that whole COVID thing. Like what, as far as Gnosticism goes too, like this is, you know, this sort of Gnostic revival. What's your thoughts on how the world's playing out right now, according to Gnosticism?
That's, I know, a good, that's kind question. Of a vague, vague, I mean, I'm vague just, question. Yeah, but I'm just doing what I'm doing. I mean, obviously, the Gnostic ideas of simulated reality and archons, which you can tie to Nephilim or extraterrestrials, are bigger than ever. You guys, I'm sure, noticed suddenly Jung is hotter than ever. And, you know, occultists and New Age, I'll talk about shadow work, you know, like something that's been around for decades. So, this stuff, it's certainly more popular than ever. And Gnosis, a direct experience with a higher world, or as you and I know, Grammy, with a higher power, as we know it, all that. So, yeah, it's still very popular and still engaging, if you would. I mean, I just, you know, one day at a time, I do one guest at a time, and I put podcasts when I can. I don't do so much, straightforward Nag Hammadi Library Gnostic Gospels. I do sort of the collection or the constellation around Gnosticism, which includes Jung and Philip K. Dick, secret societies, and even some conspiracy theories too. So, I'm grateful that I still can continue doing what I'm doing.
I love it. Yeah, that's it's interesting how you blend this, because we kind of fall in that, you know, in a similar category where it all blends into kind of, you can't really stay away from the modern conspiracies. So you end up, you know, I was thinking of Chris Knowles a lot when you were talking about all that, because he brings so much symbolism and all this to what's going on, you know, in our modern world. So it's interesting having people like yourself and Chris and approaching it from the ancient wisdom point of view, but seeing it through a modern lens as well, because it's what about all the overt symbolism that's happening? Like, you know, like the Olympic, the Olympics, for example, like, I mean, doesn't it blow you away how in your face stuff is becoming now?
Yeah. But I think that's a place where we all converge, whether it's Gnosticism or Chris's synchro mysticism or whatever, because it's obvious that magic works. It's obviously that for tens of thousands of years, those on top, the priest and the king, the establishment, the royal families, whatever you want, know that there are certain symbols and energies that not only can control the population and keep them suppressed, but they can interact with these higher beings, if you would, and open portals. Donnie Darko, have you ever seen a portal? The scene in the movie theater? They can open these portals and gain extreme power. They want immortality. They want the rush of feeling godlike and all that. And they've been doing this for tens of thousands of years. the Gnostics talked about it. Others have talked about it. And we are talking about it today, but it just becomes, you might say, so apparent, of course. Also, where we converge is this idea that they're interacting with these beings that somehow either have taken control of reality or they've taken control of the world. I may call them the Gnostics. Others may call them the Anunnaki. Others may call them the Titans or the Watchers or the Nephilim. But the Archons. In those myths, you start. I talked to a lady the other day, even in Bolivia, there's a story of these beings called the Anunnaki. Sounds like Anunnaki, but it's the same story. These engineers that come and enslave humanity and all that. So you start seeing this sort of idea coming around. And in our age of 2024, where, you know, since we last talked, you notice that us that thought about UFOs, we're no longer the kooks. Now we're like the mainstream. That's how much times have changed. But the idea of, you know, extraterrestrials all works out. So it's all converging, but it's kind of, we're all saying the same thing, but with different myths, cultures, and so forth. And it all comes down to the same thing, right? The individual has rights. We should be free as humans, and we should be compassionate to the world, to nature. I mean, it's not very complicated, right, guys? Very simple. Leave us alone. Let us live our lives. We're going to do fine with nature.
Exactly. That's well said. I've been meaning to do like a post or something, because I feel like, can't we just split up already? Like humanity, like let us go our way one way. And then I feel like there is a split. Like there could be a split. Of course, there's people on the fringes and there's people in the middle that might not, you know, pick a side, but I mean, it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy split. You either just want to control other people or not, or you want to be left alone, that kind of thing. And I'm like, can't we just split up already and get out of this this sort of matrix that we're living in? But what's your prediction then? I mean, things are escalating. No. Like, what's your, like, how is it going to keep going from here?
I would say as above, so below. I would say at least the United States and probably Canada, it's time for a divorce and a split. I mean, that's it. I mean, I don't think there's any other way around it. We just need to get to it. And I know in our tropes, we have the head that will be walking in fields like at Gettysburg, like putting our muskets and shooting each other. It doesn't even have to be violent, or, you know, it could just be a simple split. I'm sure in Canada, it would probably be a good idea to split up that country too. I mean, I don't see any other solution from a spiritual one. It's not about splitting. I keep telling people it really is about going inward, and it is a spiritual solution. You can't vote our way out of things. There's no politician coming to save us, or guru or hero, no Musk or Trump or Harris, or it really is within us and our communities to create good egregores and good spiritual places. And just that's really the way out. I can't see any other way out. I mean, I don't know. I know people really were hurt for the last 4 years, and because these were very chaotic times. But I hate to tell people, you got to lean into the chaos. In my podcast, I call it, this is the age of Hermes. It's the age of the trickster. We are transitioning to another time. And only this trickster mentality will get us through the other side, as he has in all other ages. So that's, you know, embrace the chaos, you know, in chaotic systems, be the butterfly effect. It just takes one thread and you can throw the whole thing off balance if you want. So those are my simple short solutions. And I think that's why, like Chris and I at the Astronosis, we're having that talk. Why are so many people like on the fringes, it seems, going back to Orthodox Christianity or Christianity? And I can understand why, because the God of the Bible offers order, right? These are the rules. You're protected. This is how we do it. The church will take care of it. And in these chaotic times, some men just need it. Men aren't getting initiated. So that's where they're ending up with people like Andrew Tate, because we've lost our initiation mechanism for men. We need that back, because we men are a mess from the time we're 13 to the time we're in adulthood. We need to be, you know, we need initiation and control and all that. So I can see why some men have gone into right-wing Christianity. But my advice is now, man, embrace the chaos, go through the storm, just let it rip.
Well, it's funny. We've been talking about the same thing. I mean, but I look at it as it's a rebellious position right now because of the overt war on Christianity and against Christ. And, right. You know, it seems like the rebellious position. It's like, well, what are we going to do when everybody seems to be at war with us? We're going to join that side and fight back. That seems to be the logical thing. But I mean, I was thinking about Egregore's. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking about Egregore.
Yeah, the problem with that is I think we're on an overlap or a 1 second delay. Go ahead, talk about Egregores.
Well, no, I feel like we're in a massive Egregore recently with social media and with all this stuff coming out with the Olympics. And it's not just the overt symbolism one way, but it's everybody's reaction to it right now. The new age kind of getting, you know, pushed back. You know, there's a like, and maybe that's from the increase in the right hand Christian thing that's happening right now as well. But I feel like there's a big real battle with egregores right now. And I do like the advice to embrace the chaos, really. But what were you going to say about the rebellious position?
Yeah, I like what you said about egregores. Of course, that's what we do with communities and things. And what was I going to say? Yeah, you have to be careful because Chris Knowles did a lot of work years ago. I think we're looking at 10 years ago, how the Christian right was a complete psyop, like QAnon and many of these movements. And now even maybe late to the game, people like James Lindsay and others are starting to realize, oh, crap, this new Christian right might be a psyop. Because that's how it works, right, guys? No matter where you go, it's corrupt. The archons are going to get their talons or whatever is going to get their talons into things. So again, we go back to the thing of chaos. And the other thing that it's interesting is I was talking to a guest, and when you look at the statistics in 2009, race relations and gender relations were good. I say we did it, right? Generation X, our dream has come true. The content of their character, judge everybody on their merits. Things were fine. But then everything split up and went to shit. Why? Social media. Social media itself is created to divide us. That's how the algorithm works. That's how these companies make money, that we get the shit that gives us fight or flight, or the person that agrees with us, or the dick we want to write a smart comment about on social media. So that's the problem right there, was the divisive social. Of course, the housing crash, you know, destroyed the hopes and dreams of a generation of working class people and others of all races and colors. So you had those two problems, and it's just being exasperated today. And I think we need to put the brakes. And again, we need to go into the chaos or disengage and work on our inner selves. Stop projecting. Find ways to get along. Again, 2009. Everybody was getting along pretty well, all colors, genders. We were, you know, in North America, we were on our way to something pretty decent, but the powers that be said, there's no money into it. Let's change things around. Divide and conquer is how you make money and how you control the population.
Do you think that, do you think there's a reason for that? And is there specifically a reason that Gnosticism might be playing? Is it in reaction to a population that seems to be awakening and not wokening, but awakening at an alarming rate to spirituality and to magic and to manifestation and to corruption and to, you know, just sort of a bunch of stuff all at once? But if you had to like pick a package to put it all into, gnosis might be as good a word to describe it as anything, right? Because it's just gnosis about a bunch of different things,
right? No, for sure. Yeah, and that's always one way to do it, but as the Persian saying goes, evil always turns stupid, and they have turned really stupid. They've gotten so inbred, the old playbook doesn't work. Too many people woke up after 9/11 and the Iraq war and the housing crash. So I don't think we can put that genie in the bottle. And of course, there's always the eugenics stance. I mean, even mythologically, when you look at the Trojan War and you read the text, the Trojan War wasn't about love. the Trojan War was because Zeus decided that the human population had grown too much, and he needed to cut it down to size and give it a little humility. And these myths, as they say, never were, but always are. In other words, it's true. So again, you have this game of eugenics where too many people wake up. We got too many people on this place. We need to bring them down. We need to control them. We need to create the right type of people. And it's a game that's always been happening. And I think that's what it's good for podcasts and reading and all that, and reading history and mythology, because you know it's not original. As Gandalf told Frodo, these things happen. You just have to do the best you can in these days. Nothing new under the sun. So there's always a solution. You know, even going back to the Lord of the Rings, don't feel hopeless. Everybody has a mission. Everybody has a purpose. We can all make a difference. Like, again, the butterfly effect. And as the Queen of the Elves said, even the smallest person can change the course of the future. So we have the power. We just have to remember that and believe in it.
It's just hard sometimes to accept that there's no easy. So like, there might be solutions, but it's not like we're going to just win it. Like it's the long battle. It's a long game. You know, we can change, sure. We can turn the tide, and we can sort of, but I feel like I've come to surrender to this as being like a process and not, you know, getting to the final stage here.
Yeah, it's a changing of an era. Western culture is collapsing. It happens many times throughout history. Some nations do very well. Some cultures do fine. They just move on. I mean, nothing wrong with it. I guess the only difference is we got nuclear warheads this time around. So that makes it brings a little anxiety, right?
And electricity. I mean, we're pretty fragile. So yeah. Although we're the most advanced we've been, and who knows how long, we're the most fragile as well. So
scary. Technology can wipe out half of humanity pretty fast. Yeah. So that's
or the lack of technology can wipe out a bunch of people pretty fast too. You know, maybe even. They don't even need to, like, you know, I go back and forth on whether the nukes are even real or if they even work anymore. You know, if it was always just a giant control scam, you know, if we can figure, you know, I go back and forth on that. But,
the power going out,
that'll do it, right? If the power goes out, just the power going out for a month would probably take out half the population.
Yeah. Yeah. But you have to wonder if that's a psyop, because I worked for this company, this marketing company, in like 2017. I was doing going to these conferences and writing copy about this. So I'm like, you know what I mean? They're going to use it to fearmong so that we can give up our rights. The light could go out with our grid, so you better give your rights and go live in a pod and eat bugs. So it's always that sort of balancing act. Yeah, I've heard about the nukes are gay and fake. I haven't been able to like get a guest to give an argument for it, so hopefully we'll see. But what did I say at the Astronosis conference? I said something like, what is more valuable to you, Gnosis or coffee? And everybody was like, forget the nuclear warheads. Imagine if they took away coffee for 3 days in our civilization. There'd be riots on the street and airplanes falling from the sky. And I think I'm joking.
It's hard to say. I mean,
yeah. Like, I don't want to be in that world.
What was Astronosis like? Tell us a bit about that.
It was really good. I mean, we did it 3 years ago. A friend of mine, he did the I Ching, and the I Ching sort of told him, tell Miguel, we need to do an Astronosis conference. It'll be well, and it has to be in the spring equinox, and it has to be in, of all places, Cancun. So, and that was 2021, when a lot of the world was still shut down. You still had to get tests, and it was hard to travel, but we did it anyway. And it was wonderful. We got about 30, 35 people. Gordon White came because he was traveling to South America. Chris Knowles was there. We got a good group of people, did our little conference by the ocean. We went to see the pyramids. And then the year after, we did it at the Theosophical Society here in Wheaton, Illinois. Amazing campus, very spiritual, kindest people, so much energy and magic there. And we did it last year. The theme was, the first year was, we'll just call it Astronosis, the connection of UFOs and Gnosticism. Last year, the theme was the Archons. It was called Meet the Archons. So speakers talked about, again, you know, some sort of version of what they thought the Archons were. And this year was, we grew it. Every year we've grown it, and this one just really exploded. Sometimes there was about 100 people there. We had incredible speakers. Chris came back, Mitch Horowitz. We had college professors. We just had a great group, and we started adding more experiential stuff. We had like a poetry reading, a meditation, a couple of meditation, a Sophianic mysteries exercise, a social. So we just mixed it up, and it was from the feedback from attendees and speakers and everything, it was the best one yet, and everybody really had a great experience.
Where was that at this year?
Same at the Theosophical Society. Okay. So yeah, we decided to repeat it because, again, it was such a good place to have it. It's logical because it's a spiritual center or campus, and again, they have great. It's a great. Yeah, they got great resources to hold an event, and again, everybody, you know, eat the same dog food, and the staff is just really nice and kind.
Over a weekend or
a Friday and a Saturday.
Yeah,
and then there were some tours. I think some of the group took this tour to Wisconsin to go see House on the Rock and Frank Lloyd Wright's house. He's got all these houses, and the guy was really into esoteric and occult symbolism. So people had fun up there doing that.
That sounds like fun. So you had 100 people stay there, or were there? Did they just stay at hotels and come there during the day?
Yeah, the hotels, the Theosophical Society does have rooms. And so the guests or the speakers were able to get rooms. So that's how we did, because they only have like 10, 15 rooms. They're like dorm rooms, if you would. So they stayed there, and most people were at the hotel. We had our social at the hotel. Again, it was just a lot of really cool people there. As we talk, Greg Carwood was there. He's actually originally from the area, so he showed up and hung out with people, and it was a good time.
Man, that's great. That's good to see. I mean, a bunch of different shows now are started branching out into this, getting it into the real life space, which. I mean, it really seems to make a difference in people's lives. I mean, more than the show, or maybe it's just because you can see it firsthand. But I mean, just like, you know, you can see a lot of people come to these events and they just find, you know, something they seemingly didn't even know was missing until they showed up there.
Yeah, it's the idea of touch grass. And yeah, technology is wonderful. All three of us can have this great conversation. But it's still just pixels at the end of the day. It's not real. It's Gnostic. It's an illusion. But when you meet people, you know, in real life, and again, you're talking about Graham Egregores, and everybody's together and they're chanting or socializing or listening, you get this energy. And it's wonderful. I mean, you know, it is Graham Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. You go there for the egregore to get that energy so you can deal with life and not relapse. So it's similar. And what people liked about Astronosis, including Greg and others, is that we had fun. They said it was fun because the issue I've heard, and I don't attend, is that you go to a lot of these occult ones and everything, and everybody's in activist mode and fighting mode, right? We got to destroy, we got to do this, and this is important. Because it was Gnosticism, there was very little politics or activism. It was more high-level philosophical healing spirituality, still with an edge because you're dealing with archons and simulation and mind control. But people just had a good time. Everybody was relaxed and happy and just, you know, letting off steam while being able to get all this unique information, because a lot of these talks and presentations, not even on the podcast, you can get. People brought their A game and spoke a very, really original ideas on simulation and AI and connecting with the goddess and so many of how the moon is fake and astrology is a construct of the arc. I mean, serious, but still fun and inspirational.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, it does. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the one. We have one coming up in November, too. Just our own little one with some like a Wim Hof breathwork instructor and stuff. And yeah, looking forward to it. It'll be fun. Yeah. A cold river and natural hot springs and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Very cool. Where do you guys have it?
We have it in November. What's that? Go ahead, Dan.
Did you say when or where?
When and where?
In Vermeer, British Columbia, right at the start of winter here in Canada. So,
okay.
Did we have snow? This?
Yeah, there was snow last time. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit of snow, enough that one van couldn't make it up the hill. So,
yeah.
Whoa.
But yeah, it's like proper cold water and proper hot water. And it's in, we get to take people through two of Canada's most beautiful Rocky Mountain National Parks. And yeah, it's a time. It's time.
So it's like a yearly thing. Eh? That's very cool.
Well, this is only the second year, so we'll see. We've been doing them all over the states, and we decided to bring one home. And it's just a little easier logistically and financially. And
yeah, I've seen you guys do the tours, and I've seen the pictures, and they're very cool. So yeah, I'm glad you're doing it again. It's invaluable. Definitely bring a lot of spirituality and healing and all that. I think that's the best news I heard reading a Philip K. Dick is like, I don't have to be cured. I just have to be healed. I don't have to be sane. I just got to have a little healing.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Contentment is underrated.
You know? Yeah. So is acceptance.
Yeah.
Acceptance is way overrated, I would say. It would seem like.
So is there any topics, like anything on your wish list that you haven't talked about in your show that you're kind of itching to talk about a little bit? Because you do explore like a really wide variety of, you know, magic and the cult and all different kinds of sort of mystical and religious stuff too. Like, I mean, it's quite the
wide range. I mean, again, as we talked, I want to find out if nukes are real. Again, I know I'm projecting because, you know, we all grew up where, you'd see, wake up in the morning and say, oh my God, is this the day I'm going to see like a mushroom cloud over the, you know, the Soviets finally got sick of us or vice versa. And it's still a threat to us and our children. If they're real, it could just take one. We've come so close throughout history when you study it. So it would be, I'd feel both happy and pissed off if it was a lie, because I'd be happy like, oh my God, don't have to worry. But then I'd be mad. Hey, my childhood being all worried, and be all these beautiful visuals that you see like in The Watchmen and other in Dr. Strangelove. It's such a cool imagery about the postmodern man. So that would be one I think I'd like to explore. Again, guests always bring their unique slant. I always have this rule when it comes to Gnosticism. There are no wrong answers. It's still a very, very new field, believe it or not, guys. I mean, Nag Hammadi was translated for the first time in English, another language, 1977.
Wow,
55 texts. You know, the Bible and the Quran have had centuries, or the Torah, thousands of years of people trying to interpret it. So there is still a lot of room and understanding about what Gnosis is, what are the origins of Gnosticism, how it can really apply their rituals. We're finally understanding more or less about these ancient rituals and finally adopting them to a modern way, prayers, chants, so much. So it's great to talk to people and give me their own take and everything else. Even when I do work on Jung, a lot of Jungians, friends are Jungian, they said, there's no wrong or right way to do Jung. Jung makes sure that he wasn't leaving a religion. He left it pretty wide open and obscure. There are interpretations of Jung, and how these interpretations work in your life is you find out if they're bullshit or not. Are you more individuated? Are you healed and all that? So it's exciting because, again, there's still so much to learn about Gnosticism and Hermeticism that'll go for hundreds of years.
What do you foresee coming out, or what do you foresee becoming popular or learning more about from the Nag Hammadi?
Good question. I mean, again, Jung is more popular than ever, and the basis of his depth psychology is Gnosticism. It's so obvious. Jungians may avoid this, but it is shadow work and all that. Philip K. Dick still continues to influence a whole culture of filmmakers and artists and writers. So it's exciting. I mean, from the Nag Hammadi Library, I think the one thing that gets me excited is that and this is from very sober scholars. The more you look at the Gnostics, the more you get ancient Egyptian mysteries, like the core, like the, you know, the essence. I mean, the Gnostics, I think the Gnostics, all they were was taking the baton of these ancient Egyptian mysteries and their magic and their rituals and just sort of bringing them into the Greco-Roman world and sort of couching them in a Christian mythology. So the more you do that, the more exciting it is, because we really are getting into some primordial arcane magic and spirituality. So that's exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. Going way, way back too, of course. So
yeah. And Elvis wore an Ankh in the book. Yeah. He always wore an Egyptian Ankh. That was one of his necklaces. He knew. Yeah. He read the Gospel of Thomas. You knew the Gospel of Thomas.
Would you recommend, what would you recommend out of all the Bibles?
Oh my God, there's so many. God, there's so many translation. I would recommend, I have like a reading list because it's what your entry point is. Like my entry point was Philip K. Dick. I'd been reading the Nag Hammadi Library. It felt familiar, the story of Sophia and Gnosis and the Demiurge, but I wasn't getting it. Once I read Valis, everything opened up for me. It's like, I get this movement or this ideology. For others, it might be The Matrix, might be the Gospel of Thomas. It might be a text like Thunder Perfect Mind, which is a beautiful poem about a goddess. So it really depends how you want to approach it. I don't have, or do you, maybe an introduction book like Elaine Pagel's The Gnostic Gospels or something. And so, I mean, my idea is always like, look, every individual is different. I can't tell you how to approach spirituality. I would be robbing you of your own agency.
Well, what's it about the Gospel of Thomas?
Because it's very approachable. It's a list saying about 114 sayings, and 80% seem to have parallels in the New Testament, although there are changes. There's a lot of changes how it is. So it's more approachable if your background was a Christian. But at the same time,
that's also from the Nag Hammadi then too. So
okay. So, but it also has these very mystical sayings too, and together they create this sort of very amazing text. And even as most scholars agree, this is a mystical text that you are meant to read, and you are meant to find your own personal insight and ability to see through the veil. In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus is like, the kingdom of the Father is everywhere, but it is obscured. There's a veil around it. You have to get this veil, but the kingdom of the Father is within you. So it's this text that if you meditate and read it, according to Jesus, you're able to break open reality and see a higher reality. And also Jesus says very explicitly that if you drink from my mouth, you shall become me. In other words, we are all meant to become this Jesus, this Christ consciousness, if we would just wake up. And those are the really cool messages that you see through the Gospel of Thomas. But again, it's one of those that was probably very personal, that each of us has a different entry point or saying or process that will wake us up, that'll give us that red pill, if you would.
Darren, do you got any questions? Red
pill suppository, as I call it on the show.
The red pill suppository. Did you notice any sort of a pattern over the last 4 years in the show and the guests and the interactions? Did you find your community kind of split over the whole thing, or did you find that it all sort of went in the same direction? Were you disappointed? Were you impressed? Where did you sort of gauge your community compared to the general populace?
I think everybody, again, as much as we talk about archons and find yourself all that, we always tiptoed over those issues. I want to keep it high level because those are eternal issues. You know, I kept telling people things come and go, but your individuality, your rights, once those are gone, you ain't getting those back. That's one idea I kept saying. Regardless of what your stance, where you stood in it, you make your choices, your body, what you want to do. What I want to do is what I want to do. So that was my thing. And then I remember what in 2020, that Dune line before the movie Fear is the Mind Killer kept going around me. And I realized, man, that is the greatest virus in the world. Forget COVID. You know, if you can give somebody a little virus of fear and let that spread in their mind, you can get them to do anything, to see anything. And I'm not judging, because I have to look at my life when I got afraid and I made stupid decisions and cut off people and, you know, robbed myself of years of just being free and happy. It's a horrible virus, but it really comes down. We're talking about chaos is, you know, I want to live free. I want people to have their rights and their individuality. And it's not an easy one, because as somebody once told me on the show, in an equal society, you have less freedom. In a free society, you have less equality. And I hate that. I really do, because I would love to have a society where we're all equal and everybody's free. But I haven't cracked that nut, guys. I think that's my goal for the next 4 years.
To figure out which, I mean, there's something to it, because as soon as you introduce freedom, then people are going to differentiate. Some people are going to use that freedom to do not a lot and to maybe have as much experiences as they can in place of other things. And other people are going to really try and excel and get ahead and conquer things. And, you know, and other people might try and squirrel a bunch of stuff away for their the people that'll come after them. So I mean, you know, we're not, humans aren't equal. I mean, it sucks to, you know, that's kind of the shitty thing that boils down to at the end of the day, is we're not fucking equal. We come from, and I mean, I used to think maybe everybody's got their own sort of thing, but now I even wonder about that. You know, it seems like there might just be a bunch of, well, as the elite would call them, useless eaters. But, and 4 years ago when I talked to you, I would have said that those people don't matter. They can just sort of be ignored. But now, 4 years later, my stance on that has kind of changed, to the point that the mob can be dangerous to people, to people that are at odds with the mob for whatever reason, which is an issue, because the mob seems to be very easily manipulated.
Yeah, that is true. And I think that's the one thing that's changed in 4 years, is I am done with democracy. Finished. Over. I have gone full-blown anarchist. I mean, democracy is mob rules. That's all it is, isn't it? You get 51% of people decide you need to die or anything, and they'll circumvent rights in the republic. So I just decided I have embraced anarchism. I'm looking for other political systems. I know they're out there. You can't limit it. There's always something we haven't seen or explored. I mean, that's what human imagination has. But democracy, it had a good run, along with socialism and conservatism and liberalism and all those isms. But I think it's time to shelve those, or take them out to the back and just shoot them all and see if we can find something better. So I can't think any other way out of this.
That's so funny. Hey, I'd say that's where we're at, Darren? Almost exactly. Again, there's these weird commonalities. Yeah,
I was in libertarianism for a while there, and I was like, nah, that don't work either, because then the corporate
libertarians and the libertarians are so insane.
They're almost useful idiots for the mega corporation and stuff at this point. I mean, if you want to do libertarianism, we got to start from scratch. So that there's not a bunch of people with 10 cards in their hand. Well, I got one and I'm trying to say whatever, and then people say, well, anarchy, this and that. I was like, yeah, but anarchy, at least if the corporations run rimshot too bad, they never know that we might not just come and fucking burn the place down. So and I can even get more into even like maybe some sort of a monarch system these days. I would almost have more time for that, because the difference is technology has sort of taken away that monopoly on violence. I mean, if we've all got an AR-15, then the king's got to watch what the fuck he says, period. Period. You know what I mean? Because if there's, as long as we've got an armed populace, then I think the monarch would almost lend itself to almost have to a benevolency already, because the second he's not, you know, you've got the, which was kind of what the USA was supposed to be. I mean, let's be honest, it was supposed to be exactly that, without the, and sort of separating it all to the point where you, the monarch can't really take those rights away. But we ruined that. So that's when you have to be like, oh, there can't be anything, because we had arguably the best system in the world for figuring shit out, and we can't do it. It doesn't, it's not working. It's been hijacked.
It's been hijacked or corrupted, or
whatever system we make is going to be hijacked or corrupted. So there just can't be a system.
Yeah, and I think one of my big realizations about freedom was that during you know, this mob rule, and probably, let's say, like 2022, early 2022, before the convoy, but the freedom for some of these people, honestly, they feel freedom when they're told what to do. Like, there is a freedom in that. There is a freedom in just following along with whatever you're told to do, because you don't have to worry about anything on your own. You just follow along, and that is a type of freedom. So, you know, maybe we do all want freedom. It's just how that freedom looks. Like, I don't want to be told what to do. I want to take responsibility for myself. But others see freedom in a completely different lens.
Yeah. It's like the famous story with Eric Hoffer in his book. He talks about when they captured this Nazi officer, and they're like, why the hell did you do this? You knew it was bad. He's like, I wanted to be free from freedom. And I can relate. Living is hard. Yeah. Being a grown-up is hard. Decisions always have a blowback, and it's painful, whether it's with our kids or spouses, or, you know, there's a price to pay, big price to pay. It's easier, like you said, we're just told everything's going to be safe. Here's your food. Here's your bed. Trains run on time. You know, you'll get the same, you know, it can be pretty enthralling, but
yeah, until it's not, until it's over, you know. And it is interesting that I mean, I'd like to do a show on some of the historical examples of real monarchies that work. Like, I remember reading some of these books on secret societies, and I don't know if it was the Illuminati one or the ones in the Middle Ages, where they were going, like, they were trying to interfere with, they were trying to get rid of the monarchy and the government, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say the Illuminati, and they would go to this small French town, and the town was run by like a lord or a king or whatever, like he was, and everybody was very happy, and they didn't want this. Like, they were fine with the way things were, you know. Like, there's probably some monarchies that were, the king needed people to be good and like what he was doing. I mean, they had to probably balance that line between, like, I got to be careful with the people here, you know, because you can't run a, you know, a monarchy where everybody's always pissed off with you. So it's seeming like just, you know, better and better as we go along here, that maybe that is one of the solutions too. But I'd love to dig into some of those examples where people say that they were better than we think, you know, nowadays.
Yeah, there was, I think there are examples, one of them that most people don't see, and you can find it in Jason Reza Giorgiani's book, Iranian Leviathan, but during the, was it Sasanian Empire in Persia, very big empire, early Middle Ages, there was this revolution called the Mazdakite Revolution, and the emperor bought into it, and it became a sort of socialist anarchist society. All the rules were taken down. All the marriage rules were taken down, banking rules, all that. It became, for like a generation or two, Persia became this sort of hippie commune. And that's what it was. It was just this wild hippie commune with little rules that had sort of this Gnostic, Carpocratian anarchist vibe to it. And you know what? The Persian Empire was still very powerful. It didn't miss a beat. The enemies didn't conquer it. Money came in and it worked. What didn't work is then eventually some emperor or somebody decided that the Zoroastrian priest said that was, you know, sinful and everything. So they turned on the Mazdakites and they killed the entire movement, killed all its priests, and went back to the old way, the old monarchy of Persia. But guess what happened? Within like, you know, a few years, the Muslims were able to break in and take over. So that's one example. It can, like you said, if we look at history, we're going to find examples of this communal, anarchist, more free-spirited kind of governments. We just have to, because of course it's censored. You know, the powers that be don't want us to know about societies.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, probably almost all of North America was set up like that, you know, 300 or 400 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
To fuck off. If you're going to do that, just get out of here, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes you might not like, because like Boston in colonial times, it was like Sodom and Gomorrah. It was like no rules. Everybody was drunk. There was no case, whether you're a black, white woman. But it was also a 24/7 like Mardi Gras party or orgy. It was a wild place. The founding fathers had to go in and sort of, you know, new nation, you know, we need rules, because it was just a crazy place. So, and there were a lot of places like this in America in colonial times.
Miguel, this has been fantastic. The Elvis book thing was a nice little treat. Where is there anything you feel like we didn't touch on? Anything we need to get to before we wrap this up?
No, I think we got everything. I mean, yeah, go to my website, The God Above God. The Elvis book comes out in April, working on the Bowie book. I will have a replay of Astronosis probably in the next week or two, if people want to like purchase it, just so I can recoup my costs. But it's got, you know, about 15 hours of just high level good Gnosticism. So tell your peeps to come and get it, because you'll love, you know, Chris's presentation and so, and the other stuff is just it's sublime. It's controversial, but it's very spiritually uplifting, you'll find.
How does that access work?
I'll probably just have a link, you know, pay blah, 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 $40, and you'll get a link with a password and the, you know, a page with all the YouTube channels and you know, all the YouTube videos. Yeah, very simple. Nothing complicated.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Where can people find everything? What's the website? What are all the URLs, the social media, all that kind of stuff?
Well, my website is still thegodabovegod.com. So they can type that or type Aeonbyte, A-E-O-N. B-Y-T-E, and it will come out. I'm assuming I'll have to eventually change it. I have a Miguel Connor website, because come January, I'm going to, once the book, we start promoting the book, I got to deal with the millions of Elvis fans, and they're not going to be keen on the God Above God and Gnosticism, all that weirdness. You know what I mean? I want to I want to meet them at their level and slowly show them who the real Elvis is. Because if you guys Elvis fans are, they're the most fanatical that you're ever going to find. Don't mess with them. They'll, if you think Taylor Swift fans or others are intense, nah, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, good luck with that.
Hundreds of millions around the world. That's a thing too.
Yeah.
Here's hoping that thing goes bestseller for you. It'd be nice to see that blow up. Miguel, this has been fantastic. Thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday to come and talk to us, and let's not wait 4 years to do this again.
I agree. I mean, let's see how the monkeypox does or whatever. They're going to throw election year stuff they throw at us. But yes, let's not wait this long. It was fun as always, guys. But all like right. We said, time flies when you're in the apocalypse under a totalitarian regime, right?
Yeah.
It seems like it does. Have a good Saturday night.
Take care, guys.
See ya.
And that was our chat with Miguel Connor, Aeonbyte, Coffee, Cigarettes, and Gnosis. What'd you think?
Yeah, that was good. I like that. I recommend his podcast to people, you know. It's got a wide variety of, you know, occult and mystical spiritual stuff. So, yeah.
Always a good one to check out. Always a pleasure to talk to Miguel. I did see all the pictures on Facebook, and it looked like everyone had a real good time over there. So check that out. Check out that replay. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Big thanks to Miguel for coming on the show. Of course, check out GrimericaOutlaw.ca, guys, if you want to see our other podcasts, the controversial stuff. Adult Brain, as in not a kid, but an adultbrain.ca for all the audiobooks, and contact At the Cabin for the trips. By the time this comes out, it's doubtful there will be any spots left for the Randall trip, but check it out anyway. Contact at thecabin.com. There'll definitely be some Invermere spots left that we were talking about earlier. I think that's about it. Spam Graham at GrimAmerica.com. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. and we will see you next week.
Think if I sit here long enough, fixed to this green, brown, blue spot on Earth, approximately or 2,000 years, in Old Domini, in Old Domini, my hot drink would turn cold. My hot drink would turn cold. My hot drink would turn cold. Up this morning, feeling around for my shoes. Think if I hired a million monkeys, let them mash away on some typewriters, they'd eventually write all of Shakespeare's sonnets. Maybe then you'd love me. Maybe then you'd love me. Me and my monkey. Get funky, go and get funky now. Get funky, get funky. Songbirds chirping. Woke up this morning, feeling around for my shoes. I love you up to the sky. 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 Dream sequence. As you were counting sheep, I rolled by on some comic relief. I rolled by on a tricycle, on a tricycle, on a tricycle. Basket, oh, 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 oh. Milk and honey, milk and honey, milk and honey. To be or not to be, that is the question, baby. Woke up this morning, and all my blues was dead and gone.